NPR.
Cardiff Garcia.
Stacey Vanek Smith.
Do you hear this?
Yeah, I know. It's the holiday music for the holiday season,
yes,
which
it
means
is.
It's time to ask for money. It's the giving season. It's the giving season is what I meant.
We are asking you to donate to your local NPR member station because they bring so much wonderful programming to you.
That's right. And by going to donate.npr.org/indicator, make sure you include the slash indicator.
Yeah, because then they'll know we sent you.
That's right.
And we will deliver that love right back to you.
So please make sure to donate before the end of the year.
And thanks again.
Hey, everyone. This is The Indicator from Planet Money. I'm Cardiff Garcia. Today, we are starting what we hope will be an ongoing series about financial bubbles throughout history. Some big bubbles, small bubbles, straight up weird bubbles, but all of them notable in some way. And in today's episode, we are looking at one of the earliest financial bubbles ever recorded, the financial bubble and burst, the crisis of the Roman Empire in AD 33. Technically, this was a real estate boom and bust. But the crisis was about a lot more than just real estate.
It also speaks to power dynamics and social connectivity and the way in which the financial sector in the Roman world was intimately linked with social status, elite networking, and the patron-client relationships that were there within the Roman elite. In other words, it was a crisis that was both economic and social in its aspects.
That is Colin Elliott. He's a historian at Indiana University, and he has analyzed the economics and monetary systems of ancient Rome. He says that we should be careful not to look at the Roman economy through the prism, the perspective of the modern economy. And that's what you need to know going into the story of the crisis of AD 33, which we are going to tell you right after the break.
Support for this podcast comes from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age.
These days, we think of the economy as something to be managed. So, for example, if the economy starts slowing down or going into a recession, we want policymakers to give it a boost. Historian Colin Elliott says that is not really how the Romans thought of the economy.
They don't seem to have actually conceived of the idea of an economy as a kind of external thing that needs to be stimulated or that can become run rampant, that has booms and busts.
But Colin says that the ancient Romans did at least have a banking system, and they did have lending and credit. It's just that it was mostly for elites, for people who already had money and status. Colin refers to it as a relational banking system.
The banking institutions were, for the most part, quite personal. That is, these are individual families, or even in many cases just individuals, who have access to capital, or they have quite good social relationships. But on the whole, it is elites that are using the vast majority of the credit system. And that is because security in the Roman world is primarily land.
The crisis of AD 33 happened under the watch of the emperor Tiberius. He was the second Roman emperor after Augustus, and here's what you need to know about him, about Tiberius. He kind of mailed it in.
Tiberius is quite distant as an emperor. He spends the latter years of his reign in a kind of voluntary exile at the island of Capri. He is somewhat disinterested and uninvolved in Roman politics.
Tiberius left Rome for Capri in AD 26, and Colin says this created a power vacuum in Rome, especially among the elites and the Roman Senate.
The Senate kind of is headless and is acting in a sort of confused and incoherent way.
And so all these elites, these senators, they started backstabbing each other, trying to position themselves for advancement into better jobs within the Roman government. For example, Colin says that even though Rome was by then an empire, the Roman Senate still mattered a lot. And there were a lot of public jobs that still had to be done, that were important, and which also granted a lot of prestige to the people who got those jobs. For example, there was a job of overseeing games and festivals in Rome, or the job of managing the courts in the city, or sometimes leading armies. And those jobs were only the middle rungs on this ladder of honors, as it was called.
And then at the very top of the ladder was the consulship. And there were two Roman consuls that ruled the Roman state. They had a power called imperium, which was really the right to give a command and expect immediate and automatic compliance. They had the power over life and death of an individual outside the city of Rome. They could manage courts. They called assemblies. They led armies. They were sent off after their one-year term in office to go and govern provinces.
So basically, these senators and other Roman elites were jockeying for these great jobs, sometimes accusing each other of treason to the emperor. And again, the emperor was not there himself to judge these accusations. He was on the island of Capri. And so it was all just a mess. And then some of these elite Roman senators, as a way to target their rivals, came across an idea.
They look on the books, and some of them realize that there are these laws that have been on the books for decades that require them to not lend at interest and also require them to have their land portfolios dominated by land in Italy. And they so some senators and other elites, landowning elites just outside of the Senate, are using these laws to bring each other to trial in hopes of knocking their rivals down a peg.
The sudden enforcement of these two laws, which had been ignored for decades, is what plunged the Roman Empire into a financial crisis. And here's how. Settle in. The bankers who had lent out money, they demanded that they be paid back on all of their loans immediately, as they believed was required by the new law. The problem was that the people who owed them money had already invested that money in land, so they had to rush out and sell that land to pay back the loans. And when everybody is selling land at the same time, the price of land, of course, collapses. And making things worse, the Romans who had lent money to the banks now also needed cash themselves to buy land within Italy so that they would be in compliance with the law. Except the banks were not getting their money back fast enough, so there was a kind of ancient run on the banking system. There was a shortage of cash. Land values collapsed, fortunes were being lost, and even more important to the Roman elites, their status, their reputations hung in the balance. But wait, enter Tiberius. He orders a bailout. He makes 100 million sesterces available to be lent out by the government to the elites who need it. And don't worry, 100 million sesterces, just take our word for it, it's a lot of money.
He loans this out interest-free to fellow elites for 3 years so that they can pay back their debt. What they have to do in security is provide some land as security to the state so that if they don't pay back those loans, the state would then presumably confiscate their land.
And it worked. Basically, the bailout was an injection of money for the people who needed to pay off their loans to buy them time to comply with the law, which is exactly the stabilizing economic policy that Roman elites needed from their main policymaker, the emperor. So land prices stabilized themselves, reputations were preserved.
It's true that it solved this financial problem in that it allowed elites to pay back their debts, and then private lenders were eventually found as well, and the credit market itself was restored. Fides was restored. But of course, also the status of these elites was restored.
And that's what this crisis is all about, Colin says. People who try to draw modern lessons from this ancient crisis to argue, for example, that injecting money into the economy when there's a bank run or when loans are being called in or there's a bubble crashing, they're not necessarily wrong, but they're kind of missing the point. Back then, Tiberius wasn't trying to stabilize this thing we now refer to as the economy. He was trying to help out his fellow elites, and in doing so, maybe reminding everybody that he himself was the most elite Roman of all.
And I think what I think is really important about this crisis is that we remember that that was its principal aim. That was the principal aim of the rescue package. It was not necessarily to restore the entire financial system.
So, I mean, to use sort of modern jargon, this was not a Keynesian countercyclical policy. This was a bailout for the Roman 1%.
It was, and it was a status bailout. It was a financial basic bailout, but it was also and I think most importantly, a status bailout.
This podcast was produced by Darius Rafieyan, edited by Patty Hirsch. The Indicator is a production of NPR.